I'm going to ask you to turn this morning in your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 27. We're continuing our series on David. In fact, this is the 14th message regarding David. 1 Samuel chapter 27. We're going to read the entire chapter this morning. I think it's 10, 12 verses. Page 237 in your pew Bible. David said in his heart, "I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand." So David set out and went over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to King Achish, son of Maok of Gath. David stayed with Achish at Gath, he and his troops, every man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel, and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. When Saul was told that David had fled to Gath, he no longer sought for him. Then David said to Achish, "If I have found favor in your sight, let a place be given me in one of the country towns, so that I may live there. For why should your servant live in the royal city with you?" So that day Achish gave him Ziklag. Therefore Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. The length of time that David lived in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. Now David and his men went up and made raids on the Geshurites, the Girzites, and the Amalekites, for these were the landed settlements from Telem on the way to Shur and onto the land of Egypt. David struck the land, leaving neither man nor woman alive, but took away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, the camels, and the clothing, and came back to Achish. When Achish asked, "Against whom have you made a raid today?" David would say, "Against the Negeb of Judah, or against the Negeb of the Jerahmeelites, or against the Negeb of the Kenites." David left neither man nor woman alive to be brought back to Gath, thinking, "They might tell about us and say, 'David has done so and so.'" Such was his practice all the time he lived in the country of the Philistines. Achish trusted David, thinking, he has made himself utterly abhorrent to his people Israel. Therefore, he shall always be my servant. You know, Sherry and I have lived in our home now about 7 years. But I remember when we first bought the home and moved in, it was maybe the first or second night we were there. I had gone to sleep and Sherry grabbed my arm and she said, "What was that noise?" And I woke up and I said, "I didn't hear anything. It's nothing. Go back to sleep." And I think I drifted back off to sleep, and this time she grabbed my arm again and she said, "I heard it again." Well, now I'm awake. And so I'm laying in bed waiting, and she was right. Before long, I heard the noise. And so being the brave husband that I was, I said, "You need to get up and go see what that is." Actually, I reached down by the side of the bed, and I had a flashlight there. I grabbed the flashlight, and I got up out of bed. And I get up out of bed, and I hear Sherry start praying. And she's going, "Oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus." I said, "Pray softer." And I walked out. I came out of our bedroom and started heading into the den. And I've got the flashlight. You know, I'm trying to look like Danny on Blue Bloods, you know. And about the time I got to where you would turn to go to our kitchen, I heard the ice maker dump a load of ice. And I realized it was the ice maker the whole time. So I come back to bed. Sherry's still praying. I said, "It's the ice maker." Now we've grown accustomed to that noise. We don't pay any attention to it. But as I lay in bed that night, even though I knew it was the ice maker, and I knew it was nothing to be afraid of, now I'm laying in bed awake, my heart is pounding, and now I can hear birds outside and crickets and lizards. I mean, now I am really in tune to noises. Has something like that ever happened to you? That something that you find out is really harmless takes control of your life for a minute or two or 5 minutes? Something triggers your emotions, and soon that emotion is driving your life. You're thinking, where's the baseball bat? You know, your mind starts racing ahead to your plan of action, what you're going to do. Your mood changes, you feel tense, and it's all based on a scenario that now your mind is creating for you. Today's text that we read deals with this very thing happening in the life of David. Something triggered a thought in David's mind that created a scenario and started his life on a pathway that before long David realized there is no turning back. I've got to follow this thing all the way to the end. And it all began with a one-person conversation. It all began with David saying to himself, that's exactly what the Bible says in verse 1. David said to himself, "Now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines." It all came from one thought that came into David's mind, and that one thought started a chain of reactions in his life that before long David realized, I am no longer in control of my life. The things I'm doing now, I'm having to do because of this one thought that came into his mind. You ever had those kind of conversations with yourself? That you think something, and have you noticed, maybe you have a more sanctified mind than I do, but my mind will often think of the very worst case scenario. You know, it goes to the, you sense something different in your body. You see something. And the C word gets conceived in your mind. And you think, they're going to have to cut my nose off to get that off. They're going to cut my ear off. And it starts that thing, that cycle running in our mind of thought that's building upon thought, that's building upon thought. And none of it that we know of is yet based on the truth, but it is all just starting this process in our mind. And one of the things I find interesting is David believed himself. In spite of everything that he had been told, David chose to believe this thought in his mind because his wife Abigail had said something to him in 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 29. She said this to him, "Should anyone rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, then the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God, but the lives of your enemies he will sling out as from the hollow of a sling." Now that was what his wife told him, and she should know. Then his best friend, Jonathan, said something to him in 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 17. Jonathan said this to David, "Do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul my father will not find you, and you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you, and Saul my father knows that." It was even contrary to what King Saul had told him. This man who had been pursuing him in 1 Samuel chapter 24, verse 20, Saul said this, "Now behold, I know that you will surely be king and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hands." And then in 1 Samuel 26, verse 25, Saul said this to David, "Blessed are you, my son David. You will both accomplish much and you will surely prevail." It was contrary to what God had said about him. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. "Now the Lord told Samuel, 'How long will you grieve over Saul since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have selected a king for myself among his sons.'" All of this confirmation that came to David, All of this affirmation that came to David from his wife, from his best friend, from the king who was sitting on the throne at the time, from God himself, all of this self-confirmation, this self-affirmation, David, you're going to be the next king of Israel. David, you're going to conquer. David, nothing is going to happen to you. Saul is not going to kill you. David, you're going to be a mighty ruler. All of this that came to him, that had been deposited in his mind and in his heart, was immediately swept away by one thought. David undid all of it by one thought. It only took one conversation with himself to convince David that everything everybody had said about him, including what God had said about him, was not true. That is the power of fear. And that is the power of fearful words, is that it begins to grow within us. And it begins to take root, and it begins to spread. And unfortunately with David, and unfortunately with us oftentimes, David's actions from that point on, from that one little line that 1 Samuel 27 verse 1 says, when it says, David said to himself, those 5-6 words started a process in David's life that he could not stop. It overpowered him. Because self-talk always leads to a self-plan. I want to make sure you got that. Self-talk always leads to a self-plan. So now David begins to plan what he's going to do because of this little conversation that he had with himself. He starts a plan of action. And for David, the plan had four parts. The first thing he would do is move back to Gath, the capital of the Philistines. Now, David had tried this once before in 1 Samuel chapter 21, beginning in verse 10. It says, then David arose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said to him, and notice what they said, is not this David the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one as they danced, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s? And now notice the next part. David took these words to heart and greatly feared the king of Gath. And now David is going right back down that same path. But now that he's there, he decides, now his mind is going again, and now he decides he has to put some distance between him and the king. Because David remembers that I tried this once before, and they were telling the king this guy shouldn't be in the land. And so now I've got to do something. What can I do? So David comes up with another plan. And now his plan is I'm going to move away from Gath, the capital city. 1 Samuel chapter 27, verse 5, David goes to the king and he says this, If now I have found favor in your sight, let them give me a place in one of the cities in the country that I may live there. For why should your servant live in the royal city with you? So Achish gave him Ziklag. Ziklag was approximately 25 miles away from Gath. So David moves not out of the land of the Philistines. He wants to stay in the land of the Philistines because he's convinced himself that if he stays there, Saul will not bring an army and invade the land of the Philistines to get him. But at the same time, he doesn't want to be in the capital city because there are people there who have already told the king, this is David, the king. And so he decides, I'm going to move away. But I don't want to get too far away. I want to stay in the land of the Philistines, but I don't want to be near Gath, and I don't want to be near the king. So he moves out to Ziklag. So now he's living 25 miles away. He's living far enough away that the king can't just show up and ring his doorbell. David would know he was coming, but he's far enough away that he feels a little bit of security from Saul and from Gath. But now David has another problem. And the other problem is this. He is surrounded not only by the Philistines, but by other people who hate the Jews. So he's left the security that he had in Gath because he was afraid of the king. So he's moved out to the edge of the country, but now he realizes, I'm surrounded by enemies, and I've got to do something about it. You see how this thing is growing in David, the way fear does in us? 1 Samuel chapter 27, verse 8. David comes up with a plan, and the plan is this: I'm going to kill everybody around me. Now David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites and the Girzites and the Amalekites, for they were the inhabitants of the land from ancient times as you come to Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. David attacked the land and did not leave a man or a woman alive, and he took away the sheep, the cattle, the donkeys, the camels, and their clothing. You see, this is what happens when we get those thoughts in our minds. And they begin to grow. And now David, because of that thought, is working out his plan. But what he's finding is that the deeper he goes into the plan, the bigger the problem gets. And that is what happens. The bigger you go into the plan that you have enacted in your mind, oftentimes, the deeper and bigger the problem becomes. Because now, rather than solving the problem, you are simply adding to the problem. And David runs into another problem. Every time he goes into the capital city, which he feels like he needs to do, so that the king knows that everything is going all right, the king asks him a question. Who did you attack today, David? And so now David has to lie because he's got to cover up what he's doing out there so the king doesn't find out. Verse 10, now Achish said, where have you made a raid today? And David said, against the Negev of Judah. And the word Negev simply means south. So I've attacked the south of Judah, and I've attacked the south of the Jerahmeelites, and I've attacked the south of the Kenites. David did not leave a man or a woman alive to bring to Gath, saying, otherwise they will tell about us, saying, so has David done, and so has been his practice all the time he has lived in the country of the Philistines. So now David has not only now had to murder probably hundreds of people, men, women, and children, but now he's having to cover it up. Because every time he feels like I've got to go back to the capital and check on things there, and every time he goes back, the king says to him, hey, David, tell me, what are you doing? And so David realizes, I can't tell you what I'm doing. I can't tell you I'm killing every Philistine out there. I can't tell you I've attacked Quincy and Havana and Newport and St. Mark's. I've killed everybody there. Can't tell you that. So he says, let me tell you what I've been doing. I have been raiding the Israelites. I've been attacking the Jews. And that was just what Achish wanted to hear. Self-talk led to a self-plan, and it led to self-anxiety and anguish for everybody around David. He has now brought everybody in to his fear. All of his men, his wives, all the inhabitants of the land living there, they are now have been sucked in to this, to David's self-talk. Those 5-6 little words he said to himself. Now David said to himself, and that little conversation he had with himself is now affecting everybody around him. What began as a self-talk now has David being driven by fear and anxiety and worry. So, you say, well, Rodney, what do I do? What do I do about the self-talks that I have with myself? And you know, David's self-talk was based upon what he was experiencing in his life. He was experiencing Saul trying to kill him. And so it was natural that David would have this thought go through his mind. But it was what he did with that thought. And that's the thing we need to come back to. Because you know what? Sometimes you are in situations that you cannot change. You're in situations that you just, they're going on. But what you and I have to do is then decide, what am I going to talk to myself about? What is my self-talk going to be? David's self-talk was about fear and worry and anxiety. And it led him to take step after step after step after step until before long, David is murdering people, slaughtering them, men, women, and children, and having to cover all that up. And then he's got to go back and lead another attack because he doesn't want the inhabitants of that land or that city to find out what he did. So it is just expanding all around him. What do you do with those self-talks? The first thing that I would say is this. Choose truth. Choose truth. And here's the thing we have to understand, and this is the difficulty of this little statement. It sounds so easy, but it is this. Truth is not always what you see or what you feel or what you think. Think about the Bible, the Old Testament. The children of Israel are leaving Egypt. Oh, they're singing and they're shouting. They're having a grand old time. They are free from Egypt. They are free from Pharaoh. They're not going to be slaves any longer. They're going into the promised land, and Moses is leading them along, and everybody is happy until they come to the Red Sea. And they realize that God has not built a single boat for them. And God has not constructed a bridge for them. And now they look behind them and they see this big cloud of dust. And somebody says, that's Pharaoh and his army. And they turn on Moses, and they say, didn't we tell you back there in the land of Egypt to leave us alone? Why did you bring us out here that we would be killed? Wasn't it enough that we could die in Egypt? That was what they perceived as truth. And the truth is, if any of us were there, we probably would have said the same thing. Because we're looking at it and saying, okay, a Red Sea in front of me, the Egyptian army behind me, this is not a good case. But what God saw was not what Moses saw. And what God saw was not what the children of Israel saw. And what God saw was not what Pharaoh saw. God saw the children of Israel going through the Red Sea. And so God says to Moses, is crying out and begging and pleading and crying out to God. And if you read the story in the book of Exodus, God says to him, why are you talking to me? Stretch your rod out over the sea. In other words, he said, Moses, you can choose to either believe what you're hearing around you and what your eyes are telling you when you look backwards and forwards, or Moses, you can choose to trust me. Children of Israel, years later, they're going into the promised land. The first city they come to, Jericho, walls, 20 feet tall, 9 feet thick. No battering rams, no mortars, no cannons. What do we do? Joshua begins to pray. God, what are we going to do? You've brought this people into this land. Moses is dead. I'm the leader. What am I going to do? And he sees a man one day who is dressed like a warrior. And Joshua says to him, are you for us or against us? And he said, I'm not for you or against you. I'm for God. And God sent me to tell you what to do. And you know the story, how they began walking around the city. I'm sure the people in Jericho thought, these people have been out in the sun way too long. But God did not see it that way. God saw the walls down. God saw the nation of Israel conquering. How about when we get in the New Testament and the disciples come to Jesus and they say, tell these people to go home. We can't feed them. There's 5,000 men here, not counting the women and children. And Jesus said, what do you have? And Andrew says, we have a little boy here who has 5 loaves and 2 fishes. But what is that among all these people? Jesus said, tell them to sit down. What was truth? The truth was there were 5,000 people there, not counting the women and children. The truth was that they did only have 5 loaves and 2 fishes. But there was another truth there that they did not see, is that when God steps on the scene, the impossible becomes the possible. That was what David couldn't see. David could not see God stepping on the scene. So David devised his own plan of what am I going to do with what I perceive to be reality. And there is a reality that our eyes see and our ears hear, and there's a reality that our thoughts try to tell us, but there is another reality, and it is God's reality. Choose truth. Second thing I would encourage you to do is change the channel. Change the channel. Turn off WFEAR. Turn off the worry channel. Turn off whatever it is that is feeding your fears and feeding your worry and feeding your anger. And if that means Fox or CNN or MSNBC or the local news or the music, whatever it is, whatever you're feeding yourself, if it is causing fear and anxiety and worry to grow in you, you and I need to turn it off. And that even means the things that I talk about, the things that I say to other people, the things that I share. I need to start turning off the fear and the worry and the anger and the angst and start sharing about God. Listen to what Paul said in Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good report, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things. You and I have to make a willful choice. What am I going to feed myself? What am I going to feed my heart? What am I going to feed my mind? Am I going to feed my mind worry and fear and anger and depression and I want to, you know, whatever it is? Or am I going to choose to feed myself what this Bible says? Am I going to feed myself what the world is telling me, what my perceptions are telling me, or am I going to go into the Bible and start feeding myself on what it tells me? What truth am I going to believe? And then lastly, choose truth, change the channel, practice prayer. Prayer is where I come to God and honestly open my heart up to Him, and I tell Him what I'm afraid of, what I'm worried about, what I'm angry about, what has me concerned. You have that opportunity to just begin to pour it out to God, because God is not going to be shocked by it. And God's not going to be embarrassed by it. And God's not going to say to you, well, you should, you know, my mom, love her. She was a wonderful woman. But oftentimes her response, if you went to my mom and talked, she'd just say, well, you just shouldn't feel that way. You know, you're not going to hear that from God. God is not going to say to you, well, you shouldn't feel that way. God's not going to say to you, well, you shouldn't pray that way. He's going to listen. I love what Peter said in 1 Peter 5:7. Cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. Cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. Paul said this in Philippians chapter 4. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And listen to this last part. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. The Bible tells us if you want to find peace, you're not going to find it in any other place other than going to God and saying, Lord, right now my life stinks. And I'm worried about this, and I'm worried about that situation. And I don't know what to do about this thing, and I don't know what to do about that. And Lord, I'm feeling pains in my body, and I'm afraid to go to the doctor to find out what they are. And Lord, I haven't heard from my son or daughter in 2 weeks. I don't know what they're doing. Maybe something's wrong. And you have to choose, am I going to allow my mind now to start putting its own pieces together, or am I going to come and say, but God, you know what's going on. I don't know what else to do, Lord. I've run out of options. But you know. Help me, God. Help me. You know, when Peter got out of the boat and started walking on the water, every truth that we would say, he threw completely out. Because the truth is, you don't walk on water. But when he got out of the boat and began to walk to Jesus, the Bible says that he saw the winds and the waves boisterous. He got his thought pattern back on what he perceived to be reality. And he began to go down. I love his prayer. He did not say, now, Father, I come to you in the name of your son, Jesus. And I just want to thank you that I did take 3 steps on water, but Lord, you know there's sharks in this pond and I'm going under. He said 3 words, Lord, save me. Lord, save me. Have you ever just got down on your knees and just said, God, save me. I don't know what to do. My mind, Lord, is racing. I'm picturing worst case scenario. My body, my blood pressure, my everything is being affected by this. Help me. Have you ever given God the opportunity to take control of the situation? One self-conversation brought David heartache and pain and sorrow, not just into his life, but into the lives of people all around him. His self-talk led to self-action, and his self-action just added more problems and pain to his life. So here's my questions for us, including myself, as we close. What are your self-conversations like? What do you talk to yourself about? Are you speaking faith and hope? Or are you talking to yourself about your fears? Do you talk about the size of your God or the size of your problem? Have you convinced yourself that a lie is the truth and that God's truth is a lie? Because that's what David did. And I would encourage you today, and please don't think I'm standing on a soapbox looking down at you saying, you need to straighten up. I've got my life together. No, I'm telling you that you and I have to make choices in our lives of what am I going to think about and how am I going to allow those thoughts to drive my life. Father, I do thank you for David, who shows us what life is really like. No fluff, no acting, no and everyone lived happily ever after ending. He truly showed us, Lord, what life is like. He showed us what life is like when it's lived in your presence, and he showed us what life is like when David took control. And I pray today, Father, that your word would remind us that you are the one who determines what truth really is. And I pray, Father, that we would guard our hearts and our minds, and we would guard what we allow into our hearts and into our minds, and we would guard what we say to ourselves and what we say to others, that we would realize that whatever we're talking about, we're giving it life. Help us, Father. Solomon said it so well when he said, "Guard your heart, for out of it spring the issues of life." We ask this now in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.